You're listening to Extinct, a podcast about dead things. I'm Alice Leggett. Together, we'll explore the stories of species that have existed over millions of years, from the earliest forms of life to those that died out more recently, as well as modern biodiversity loss and conservation initiatives. You're listening to Extinct. In this episode, we're uncovering one of the most famous extinct animals of all time, the thylacine, or as many people know it, the Tasmanian tiger. The thylacine is a carnivorous marsupial that went extinct in 1936, only 2 months after being granted protected status. Many people would be familiar with the photo of the last known Tasmanian tiger at a zoo in Hobart, which passed away on September 7th, 1936. September 7th is now National Threatened Species Day in Australia. To talk more about the thylacine, we have epigeneticist Professor Andrew Pask. Professor Pask is the head of the Thylacine Integrated Genomic Restoration Research Lab at the School of Biosciences in the University of Melbourne. The project is focused on marsupial conservation and, excitingly, the de-extinction of the thylacine. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us on the show. The first question I have, before we really get into things and talking about the de-extinction project, is what led you to this type of research?
Yeah, I guess I've always been fascinated with Australian marsupials. I think we have so many incredibly unique animals that my entire career as a scientist, I've always been really focused on understanding more about marsupials. So I started off working on sort of just the genetics and trying to understand the evolution of marsupials and what makes them so distinct from other mammals. And then that led me towards working on the Tasmanian tiger, which is clearly the coolest of all the marsupials that ever lived. It's this incredible, big, wolf-like apex predator marsupial, and there's no other marsupials like it. So as I started to unpack more about the biology of marsupials, I was really interested in this one in particular, just because it was so different and so unique. And so I started just trying to figure out what was the limits of what we could do with modern science in terms of understanding more about the thylacine. And so once I figured out that we could really access its complete genetic code, it kind of changed the whole thinking process on what we could do with this particular animal. And so eventually that led me to thinking about, could we actually use that to start thinking about trying to bring back the Tasmanian tiger?
Speaking of bringing it back, what is de-extinction? Because when you hear the word, you think, you know, the opposite of extinction, but what does this actually involve and what benefits do you think de-extinction work in general gives us?
I mean, it's really a fascinating and growing area of biology today. So I think this was something that, you know, was completely unthinkable 10 years ago. But with the advent of brand new technologies, particularly things like DNA editing technologies that we can do really quite well and quite reproducibly now, it kind of brought on this possibility now that we can really think about de-extincting animals and not just think about it, but we actually can do it. And it's about really thinking about how and when you would want to deploy this sort of technology to do it. But it's a good question because it's not cloning. I think lots of people think of this as sort of we've heard of cloning before and Dolly the sheep, and that you can take a cell from a living animal and create a whole nother animal from it, which you can. But the problem with the extinction, obviously, is that we don't have that living cell. So that's the part that is missing here. And we still can't create life where there is none. So we can't take our extinct animal tissue and sort of reanimate it somehow and make it live again. We have to start with something that's living. And this is where de-extinction science really becomes its own sort of separate area and separate branch of science. So the way that it works is that you look around in living animals to find whatever the closest living relative is that exists to your animal that went extinct. And then we take its DNA and its genome in a living cell and we edit it. We make all of the differences and all of the changes to turn that living cell then into the DNA blueprint of our extinct animal. And then once you've got that, you've then got your living cell with your extinct set of instructions or blueprint in it. And then we use that to then clone or go through that cloning process to create a whole living animal from it.
I guess it's not like just syringing some DNA out and putting it in a petri dish and hoping for the best. It sounds like it's a significantly more complicated process than that. But with de-extinction and this sort of technology in general, are there examples of species that have already been brought back, or is this kind of an emerging field at the forefront of this kind of technology happening right now?
Yeah, we're definitely the forefront of this happening right now. So we're the first ones to attempt to bring back a species like this. There are other de-extinction type projects that are underway that still have frozen tissues where the cells are intact from living animals. So there's one for the Lazarus frog, for example. So it's a species of frog that went extinct. And there are actually intact cells that might be able to still grow that could be used to make whole animals from. But nobody's brought anything back from sort of, you know, 100 years or so ago where it's actually been completely stored in a museum and the DNA's broken up into lots of tiny pieces and then really done a proper de-extinction project. But that said, there are quite a few of those ongoing at the moment. So we're obviously working on the Tasmanian tiger. The group I collaborate with, Colossal Biosciences, is working on the mammoth and the dodo. And there's another big group in the US called Revive and Restore that are working on the passenger pigeon and a whole host of other projects as well. So there's quite a lot of different labs around the world now that are really trying to engage and really push this field of science forward, because it is going to be a really important tool, I think, for us to have developed moving forward. We're doing a terrible job of preserving biodiversity on our planet. We still have an incredibly unacceptable amount of extinction events that happen every day. And I think this is just going to be, hopefully in the near future, another conservation tool that we have in our toolkit, where obviously we want to try and conserve species before they go extinct, but where a particular species has gone extinct that played a very important role in its ecosystem and in that environment, we'll be able to use this technology to bring those species back.
Speaking of the different labs around the world who are working on this, is there much collaboration with sharing this sort of technology, or is it all a bit more siloed at the moment?
No, we're actually really good at sharing all of the technologies that we're working on. I think we're all facing the same challenges with regards to, you know, editing genomes on this level, and then also a lot of the assisted reproductive technologies, or ART, we call it. So that's things like IVF and embryo transfers and things that has to be developed specifically for each species. And so we're actually incredibly collaborative, all of us, you know, really sharing our latest advances on this. I think all of us are really keen to see this become a very common technique that's used, and to develop sort of generic methods, if you like, that we can deploy for any species that's gone extinct to try and bring those species back.
Understanding the scope of this problem, what caused the thylacine's extinction in the first place? What were the main contributors that you'd say led to this?
Yeah, so it's a good question. And I think this is a really important consideration, not just for our project, but for any de-extinction project. It's really thinking about why specifically would you want to bring that particular animal back? So in the case of the Tasmanian tiger, you know, as I said before, it's this really incredibly unique marsupial apex predator that played an absolutely unique role in the environment. And when European settlers first came to Tasmania, they saw it as a potential threat killing sheep. They actually blamed a lot of the sheep disappearances on the thylacine. And so they had a very aggressive bounty scheme where they were actually paid £1 per dead thylacine that they could bring into the Tasmanian government. And this is, you know, like in the late 1800s, it was actually a lot of money. It was more lucrative for a farmer back then to become a bounty hunter for thylacines than it was to farm. And so they were very quickly and very aggressively hunted to extinction in Tasmania. It's a really tragic story of a clearly human-driven extinction event. And then, you know, it's only after the fact, once they've removed that animal, that they realise just the value of that animal in the environment, in the ecosystem, and unfortunately it was just too late for the Tasmanian tiger. And so that's where this technology now offers an opportunity for where a species really was incredibly important in that environment and ecosystem to undo some of those wrongs and to try and bring these species back.
The context for that, I'm assuming, would really shape how this sort of project, how it's approached, the historical context of why we lost it in the first place. But speaking of losing this species, many people have been claiming to see the thylacine over the years after it was officially declared extinct. What do you think of this? Do you think it's likely that there are still some out there that we've missed and that have kind of dropped off the radar?
Yeah, look, I'd love to believe they're still out there. I genuinely would. But I think there's no scientific evidence to suggest that they've existed past 1936, when the last animal went extinct in Hobart Zoo, unfortunately. I mean, for sure they would have persisted in the wild for a while after that. There probably would have been a few pockets of animals that were out there after that time, but certainly not for more than 10 or 15 years, I would say, beyond that time when the last animal was reported to have gone extinct. It does seem like that was maybe genuinely one of the last moments that this animal lived on the face of the earth. But I love the fact that people see them out there all the time. I think it's, you know, it's sort of our Loch Ness monster here. You know, people think they've seen it and report it. One of the amazing things about the Tasmanian tiger that I'm so excited about is its unique body shape. It really does look just like a dog or a canid. It's incredibly similar in its overall body shape, you know, and completely different from the shape of a kangaroo or a wombat or any of the other marsupials, which it's much more closely related to than dogs. But it's really got that wolf or dog-like appearance to it. And so I think because of that, there are wild dogs around in Tasmania and across Australia, because people often see them in Adelaide and they're reported all over the place. But I think it's people just seeing, unfortunately, a dog off in the distance on a rainy night and they think they've seen a Tasmanian tiger. We did work for a long, long time on trying to verify some of these sightings. So people would send us scat samples from where they thought they had seen Tasmanian tigers. And so we did a lot of DNA analyses on poo, but unfortunately it either turned out to be dog poo or Tasmanian devil poo, which is equally unpleasant. And so after looking at literally hundreds of poos, trying to verify if there is any genuine animals out there, I've certainly never been able to validate any of the sightings that have been seen, unfortunately. So I think it is very likely that they went extinct around or close to 1936 and genuinely haven't had a really bona fide sighting or any scientific evidence to prove the existence of them beyond then.
With the Extinction Project, hopefully some of those sightings will become legit.
Right, that would be amazing. Exactly right, to actually see them wandering around in the landscape. That's my ultimate dream, is to be on Tasmania one day and be able to catch a glimpse of a Tasmanian tiger disappearing into the bush or something would be absolutely incredible.
Yeah, exactly. Just going on a bush walk and hearing a rustle off to the right and it being a Tasmanian tiger just going for a walk.
It would be incredible. Yeah.
And this particular species, we've been talking about the fact that it is a really special species, and I think it's one of the biggest ecological mistakes that Australia has made since colonisation, of course. But we've lost a lot of species in Australia over the last few hundred years especially. But why the focus on this particular one?
So apex predators are those animals that sit right at the very top of the food chain, and then they eat everything else that sort of sits beneath it, or they kind of play a really critical role in that food chain. But they are fundamentally one of the single most important species in that whole food chain or hierarchy of animals in that ecosystem. And when you lose an animal, often other animals in the environment will step in and take over that niche or that particular role that it played in that ecosystem. So if you lose one sort of small herbivore, there'll be another small herbivore that can come in and it can eat the same sort of foods and things as what that animal did. The thing that was so profound about losing the Tasmanian tiger is there are no other large carnivorous hunting marsupials. This was the only one. And so when it got lost from the Tasmanian landscape, there was nothing else that could step into that same role. And so it really throws that entire ecosystem off balance. And one of the great examples of what can happen in this is the Tasmanian devil facial tumour disease. So this is a disease that nearly or would have wiped out Tasmanian devils if humans hadn't stepped in to isolate some of these animals that were uninfected and keep them safe and protected from getting the disease. Without that, they would have been wiped out on Tasmania. But if you had the Tasmanian tiger there, what their role would have been is eating those sick and wounded animals and preventing them from spreading the disease so quickly in the population. And in fact, you can model what that disease would look like if you had Tasmanian tigers still present. And it would not have led to the almost extinction of the Tasmanian devil. It would have been kept at bay and the Tasmanian devil would have still been able to thrive in Tasmania. So that's just one example of the sorts of things that we start to see happen when you lose that apex predator. But there's other great examples, you know, where they wiped out wolves in Yellowstone Park in America, for example, and that over time it changed the courses of rivers and the wildflowers that bloomed in the valleys and things all changed as a result of losing that predator. Everything changed in that landscape. And when they reintroduced them, they saw, you know, wildflowers blooming again that hadn't bloomed for 50 or 100 years. They also saw the rivers change their courses because they were monitoring now and keeping down beaver populations that were changing the flow of rivers. So there's all these sorts of knock-on effects that are impossible for us, even as biologists, to really understand just how pivotal their roles are in those environments. But they play absolutely massive roles. And because there's nothing else like the Tassie tiger, it really has left a massive gap in that ecosystem and landscape when it was hunted to extinction.
So does it kind of boil down to creating better sort of ecosystem balance there?
Yeah, so by having that animal back there, by putting the thylacine back, it can play a much bigger role in conserving all of the other species in that ecosystem than we as humans could ever do. We can go out and we can try and population manage other groups of animals in Tasmania, but we can never really fulfill the role or take over that role of what the Tasmanian tiger played when it was in that landscape. So these are not just about bringing the Tasmanian tiger back because it's a tragedy that we hunted this animal to extinction. It's actually going to help conserve all of the other animals in that ecosystem and keep that ecosystem balanced as well. So we know it's, again, looking at other species, we're losing biodiversity at a rapid rate across every country in the world. And there are, in each of these critical environments, key species that you just can't lose because there isn't anything else like them. And I think they're the ones that where we've hunted those to extinction or they've gone extinct because of some human-driven event, that we should be looking at trying to bring those particular species back.
With the specifics of bringing the Tasmanian tiger back, what does that actually involve with the species? Like, how do we bring it back?
Yeah, so I think one of my favourite things about this project is that everything that we have to do to bring the animal back has major benefits for marsupial conservation in general. So I really love that about the project is every tool that we need can be used right now to conserve the marsupials that we have left, as well as bringing the Tasmanian tiger back as the ultimate use of all of those tools. But basically what it means is we have to find that closest living relative. For us, it's really interesting because it's a very small mouse-sized marsupial called a fat-tailed dunnart. So they're the closest living relative to the Tasmanian tiger. And so they're going to be our surrogate cell that we're going to edit to change its DNA back into Tasmanian tiger DNA. But one of the great things about marsupials too is it can actually be a surrogate mum for a Tasmanian tiger, even though it's just the size of a mouse. And that's because marsupials give birth to really tiny babies. And in fact, the group that the Tasmanian tiger belongs to has the smallest babies of any marsupial. So they all give birth to little babies that are about the size of a grain of rice, really incredibly small. So that means that even a mouse-sized little dunnart can actually birth a baby thylacine. So that's really fantastic for us because it means that bit of going from having our engineered cell back to a little baby thylacine is a bit easier in a marsupial than it is for something like a mammoth, for example, where you have a long time of gestating in the mother's uterus. It's quite complicated to replicate. So that's a really cool tool for us to use. And in the whole process as well, we have to make marsupial stem cells. So we're doing a lot of work on creating stem cells. They're the cells that can give rise to a whole nother individual to enable us to do that final step of turning a cell back into a living marsupial. But that technology also has major implications for conservation right now. We know that we're having more bushfires, so more severe adverse weather events as our temperatures on the globe continue to rise. And this is particularly bad for us in Australia. And those bushfires have the ability to wipe out entire species. And if not entire species, we can lose an enormous amount of diversity and health from a particular species. So we're working with Museums Victoria and other places like Zoos Victoria to actually have a large frozen repository of tissue from marsupials from all over Australia. And then using the technologies that we have, we'll be able to actually turn that tissue back into living marsupials in the event of a bushfire. So if a bushfire goes through and wipes out all the koalas in a particular region, we could actually return koalas to that region that have the genetic diversity, have that background from that particular region, and then rewild those areas. So it's a really great technology to have in hand, regardless of the outcome for the thylacine, just to be able to conserve marsupials. So there's a lot of really exciting tools that we're developing that I think will have really broad use and really help to preserve what we've got left, as well as hopefully restore some of these amazing species that we've lost.
considering the terrible rate of extinction we're facing, particularly in Australia at the moment, it's great to hear that this is potentially going to have greater applications as well, and in terms of saving species that are currently facing massive population declines. That's really wonderful to hear for sure.
And Australia has the worst rate of mammal extinctions of any country in the world, which is terrible, right? Like, we're a wealthy country. I think we have a really great love of the environment, but we're still absolutely terrible at conserving the species that we have. And we have some of the most unique fauna on the planet. And so, yeah, I think this technology will really help safeguard against that loss. Things like bushfires can be absolutely devastating. And if we have a mechanism to really preserve and then return those animals after such events, I think we can really safeguard against a lot of loss of biodiversity in our country.
Sounds like there's a lot of hope for sure, certainly. Looking at the timeline of bringing back the Tasmanian tiger, firstly, how far off do you think we potentially are? And secondly, it being a species that we only lost less than 100 years ago, is the time between losing the species and now, is that critical in terms of making sure we have the most relevant or the most close, I suppose, genetic material to work with here?
Yes. So there's a number of things at play there. So on the timeline, I think I'm optimistic that within 10 years, we should have our edited thylacine cell that we're ready to turn back into a living Tasmanian tiger. So that's certainly what we're working towards at the moment. We are developing a lot of the technologies now to make sure that once we have that cell, we can turn that cell back into a living animal. But that's a whole lot of work in and of itself, but again, has all of those massive implications for conservation biology for marsupials. So we're really keen to develop and push the project forward on all of those fronts. But I think, watch this space, within a decade, we'll be really talking seriously about bringing a thylacine back to life.
That's so exciting. I think 10 years, it flies by pretty fast.
It does, yeah.
We could be having thylacines running around in, say, 20 years from now. Thrilling, for sure.
The other consideration is the time since extinction. And that is really a really pivotal part in all of these programs. So DNA does break down over time. So good news for everybody listening is that we can't get DNA from dinosaur bones. So we're not going to see a reenactment of Jurassic Park from this kind of technology. There is no DNA left there. So we're really limited with the extinction technology to animals that have gone recently extinct. And you've got to have some materials that are preserved well enough that you can get that entire genome, that entire code of DNA and their blueprint, so that you can rebuild that animal. So one of the great things about the Tasmanian tiger is because it was such a beautiful animal, there are samples of it in museum collections all over the world. People really wanted them in their collections. And so there is a lot of availability of samples that have been well looked after and well stored for the last 100, 150 years. And that's enabled us to completely sequence that blueprint and to get that genome so that we really can know that when we bring the Tasmanian tiger back, we're doing it properly. We're actually going to be able to completely rebuild that animal from the ground up, if you like, which is really great. And then, again, because it's only been 100 or so years since it went extinct in the wild, or so certainly since it was abundant in the wild, what that means is that there hasn't been an enormous amount of time for that ecosystem to change. And there is somewhere to put that animal back. And that's a really important consideration. I don't think we want to extinct animals where we've completely destroyed the habitat and there's nowhere for them to go. But in this case, the Tasmanian tiger, its habitat still exists in Tasmania. There's very, very large tracts still in Tasmania of untouched bushland, which is where it preferred to live. All of the prey species which it ate are still massively abundant in Tasmania. So it is a really great example of where we've got the genetic material and we've also got the ecosystem to put it back into, that it should be able to not just survive again in Tasmania, but hopefully thrive again in Tasmania and really re-establish itself as the dominant predator in that landscape.
Speaking of putting the Tasmanian tiger back in its environment, if brought back, is there a risk that the thylacine could fall victim to the same factors that killed it off in the first place? Or do you think that with modern conservation efforts, that they could be more protective and that we're maybe a bit more careful than we were before?
Yeah, I think we're definitely more careful now. I think this is something that would be very, very closely monitored in the landscape as well. So it's not like they would be released and nobody would be watching them. I would imagine these would all be tracked and people would be paying very close attention to where they are and what they're doing. So we'd be studying this very carefully for a very long period of time. And yeah, they would for sure be immediately protected species upon release into the landscape. And so it would be like any other endangered animal in Australia that you would hope that people were not going out to hunt them or kill them again. So one of the great or interesting things about the history of the Tasmanian tiger is that they never actually ate sheep. So they were persecuted for killing sheep in Tasmania, but it was actually other people stealing each other's sheep. And then they were blaming the Tasmanian tiger as sort of their scapegoat for the actually rustling sheep from each other's farms. So it's even more tragic that they used that as the ammunition to hunt this animal down. In fact, some of the famous historical photographs of the Tasmanian tiger with sheep and chickens in its mouth, they can show now were stuffed museum specimens that they actually took pictures of, you know, in the bush with a chicken in its mouth to try and hype up the propaganda that these animals were really killing livestock.
Oh my gosh.
They still ask from the sheep farmers in Tasmania to comment on this project, and they all still feel that the Tasmanian tiger could be a threat to their sheep population. So I try and assure them to read a book firstly and realise that they did not actually eat the sheep, so they should not be fearful. But also, the Tasmanian tiger truly belongs in that landscape, whereas sheep perhaps do not. So if they have to improve their lambing practices and fences and things, I would see that as not a bad compromise to be able to return such an important species back.
Of course, and I can see that we were talking before about the general ecosystem impacts of returning the Tasmanian tiger, and I can imagine that would actually benefit farmers and people who work on the land as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It will really help stabilise that entire ecosystem in Tasmania. So ultimately, it clearly will have amazing benefits across the entire landscape for sure.
That's fabulous to hear. Andrew, I think that covers all the questions I had for you. Thanks so much for joining us on the podcast and telling us all about your work. It's been wonderful.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
You've been listening to Extinct. I'm Alice Leggett. If you want to hear more about dead things, be sure to subscribe to the podcast. And don't forget to leave a rating or review. It helps Extinct reach more people who are passionate about the planet's past and future. Until next time, stay curious.